Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kian. Today, we'll discuss the review article by Eschenhagen et al. Titled Physiological Aspects of Cardiac Tissue Engineering. This article published online May 11, 2012. My guests today are Associate Editor Leon DeWint, Lead Author Thomas Eschenhagen, and Leading Expert Peter Duvendans. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. I would like to start the discussion by asking the lead author, Thomas. Could you briefly describe the technique of engineered heart tissue as you lay down in the review article, Physiological Aspects of Cardiac Tissue Engineering? And I'm really curious, how did you come up with the concept?
Thank you, Leon. Sure, I'm happy to describe this technique. It's actually an old story. I started this in 1994 in St. Louis. The background was that I met Eric Erlsen, a biophysical engineer from St. Louis in Würzburg, Germany. And he told something about a similar technique to produce lattices from fibroblasts in a three-dimensional format. And I said, wow, that's great. I'm going to do that with cardiac myocytes. So I went to St. Louis and did this with chick embryonic cardiac myocytes. So this was 1994. And the principal technique is actually very simple. Instead of plating cardiac myocytes on a plastic surface, as most people do, we mix cardiac myocytes with a liquid hydrogel, which jellifies. It's either collagen or now we are using fibrin. This provides a three-dimensional context for the cells, and then we simply need a casting form to provide a three-dimensional geometry for the cells to form a tissue. And then the rest is essentially done by the cells. Then they start to remodel the gel, they form contacts to each other, they elongate longitudinally, so they really form a cardiac tissue in this three-dimensional hydrogel. And if you provide them with the right environment and the right form, they really form little muscle strips, and that's the technique we are using currently. In former times, it was a lattices, that's what I started with. Then some years later, we formed the rings, or we made this ring model, and now some years ago, we developed what we think is a better technique by providing the cells strip-like format where they form a little muscle strip which is anchored between two elastic silicone posts. And that's actually a very important aspect of the technique, that the cells are anchored, always anchored, to something which gives them a support. So they are under continuous load. And that's essential to make them working, align and form this highly organized, longitudinally oriented tissue.
Peter, could you tell us your opinion about the pros and the cons of this three-dimensional engineered heart tissue versus a technique that you are truly an expert in, the in situ tissue engineering by approaches that promote cardiac progenitor cell homing to the infarcted myocardium?
Thank you, Leon. It's a tough question. I can take two views. I can answer this question as a scientist or as a clinician. So let's start with the scientist approach. I think it's really truly a major breakthrough. And I think that the engineered heart tissue is really something beautiful, major step forward in tissue engineering. And the way we have now engineered heart tissue available, that's something that was unthinkable, let's say, 10 years ago when Thomas started 18 years ago. If we talk about in situ differentiation, I think that's even way, way more difficult even to prove that that really happens. So I'm really a big fan of the engineered heart tissue to really understand the basics of cardiac development, and also they have some tools in hand to play with cardiac tissue outside of the human body. As a clinician, I think it's a very nice development, but still it's far away from a clinical application. It's something that's very nicely stated also in the paper, where they raise more or less 10 key questions, both about the technology and also about the potential applications in the future. And there, any kind of regenerative medicine has to beat technology, and technology is moving forward very fast. So it's still a long way before we can use this in the clinic.
And what will be the next steps? Thomas, what do you think?
For us, the next steps are concentrating on the question of vascularization, because this is certainly essential. There will be no thick cardiac tissue without sufficient vascularization and perfusion in vitro. I'm convinced by that, simply by natural laws, laws of diffusion, etc. So we are working on methods to integrate kind of blood vessels into these tissues in vitro. That's quite a task, but I think it's worth to go even from a basic science point of view. You learn a lot about blood vessel, cardiac myocytes interaction. So even if it doesn't work in a clinical application, finally, it will still teach us a lot about biology.
Thomas, could you mention something about the engineered heart tissues which could be used for predictive toxicology applications? We could envision this as a medium throughput screening device. Could you please explain us what you mean by this?
Sure. This is really something I'm excited about. Peter asked in the beginning why it took 18 years. One major answer to this question is it took a lot of time, a lot of technology to make this from a principally working model, which had been already 1995 or 1994 even, to something like what you said, an automated semi-high throughput screening device. And we learned over the years that without having this automated readout of data, you will never apply this technique in screening. This automatization of techniques was extremely important to really be able to retrieve data on a something like a screening format. And that makes this technique applicable to a lot of applications, both in industry and in basic research.
I fully support your notion. I think that's really a major step forward. And I do think that this is really the way to go for drug testing and for many other developments. So I think that you are really on track with this. And you didn't say much about disease modeling, but I think there it's also a beautiful system to do that. Because we know a lot about mutations, but if you really come down to the key mechanism of disease, and we do know mutations and we know which genes are involved, but we have no clue what's causing the disease. We don't know how a mutation causes hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. We do not know how a plakophilin mutation causes ARVC, not really in detail. And I think you have the tools and the technology to really unravel that and also think about interventions to prevent it. So I think your model is gorgeous, and I'm a big fan.
Thank you very much. That's actually our major direction at the moment. As you said, I agree. That's really a very important question. It's there, the question, and we have the tools to answer them. We have the tools because other people, like Yamanaka, invented this beautiful iPS technology. And this together, the stem cell technology and these kind of engineered heart tissue technologies together really make a difference. Because you can answer questions which simply haven't been able or haven't been possible to answer before. You get more than just the morphology of a cell or the molecular biology of a cell, you get the function in every respect. And it's quite nice to see what kind of answers you can really retrieve from this.
If you think about maturation, Thomas, what kind of steps do you see as potential beneficial or stimulating for these cells to become even more mature?
Well, that's a good question and a difficult one to answer. Some years ago, people really thought, including myself, that just putting cells like embryonic stem cell-derived cardiac myocytes, just putting them in a three-dimensional context would be sufficient to drive them into maturation. This is certainly not true. It goes a little further than just 2D, but certainly not to the end. A second intervention, which was proposed and has been tested, is electrical stimulation. At this point, our engineered heart tissues beat spontaneously. So the idea was maybe if we pace them continuously over days and even weeks, we could drive them into maturation. That's, again, partially true, but only partially. So I think what's lacking somehow is, I don't know, the factor or the factors in the cell culture medium which are lacking. And one factor which had been proposed is noregulin by Chuck Murray. And again, noregulin seems to have a little favorite effect on maturation of cardiac myocytes and cardiac myocytes in EHTs, but it's not the final answer. So it's probably, again, a combination of growth factors, and the answer is not there. What is this combination?
So thank you, Thomas Eschenhagen and Peter Duverdens. I would like to invite all the listeners to really search this review article and read it. It's a fantastic overview of the complete field. And by that, I would like to give back the word to our executive editor, Kara Hansel-Kean.
And thanks for listening to this AJP Heart and Circ podcast.